what's up? This is Tajay of the Mighty Souls of Mischief crew. I'm chilling with my man Festo, my man A Plus, and my man Boat. You know, he's dope. And right now, you know, we're just maxing in the studio. We're hailing from East Oakland, California, and sometimes it gets a little hectic out there. But right now, you know, we're going to up you on how we just chill.
This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
I'm Tajay from the Hieroglyphics crew.
Festo Hieroglyphics.
Yo, yo, peace world, it's Opio, Souls of Mischief up in here.
Adrian Young.
What up?
Thanks, guys.
We got legendary Souls of Mischief in the house. We got Adrian Young. He's on legendary status, stair steps to being.
I gotta happening? Do it for over 20 years like you guys. So.
Yeah, no, you're on the fast track.
I'm on the fast track. I'm hanging out with you guys. That's why.
What's happening? How you doing today?
Doing good.
Doing wonderful, man.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
And this is the super relaxed California, I guess.
Yo, it's kind of mad real.
Or is this the early? Or is this just the early? I had to get up early and get on an airplane. Come.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the day.
No.
Where are you guys coming from?
Oakland, California. Sunny Oakland, California.
Everybody still lives there?
Yeah. Ooh, sounded so astonished and sad.
Someone said that to me.
You haven't got out of that place?
Like, I'm born and raised in Oakland, and I still live here. And someone was like, that's not normal. Like, I never meet anybody that's from Oakland in Oakland, yeah, which is strange to me, but, you know, gentrification, what are you going to do?
That's how I feel about being in Brooklyn.
Yeah, no. I can see that when I go to Brooklyn, too. So.
It's changing.
For sure, that.
Really happy to have you guys here. I don't know how far back we want to go with this.
All the way.
Let's go back to the beginning.
Let's talk about the 90s. Let's talk about Jive.
Jive, dang, you went there.
Just start there. Start at the bottom. Start from the bottom, right?
Now we're here.
No, let's go further back. I mean, where did you guys meet? Where did you start working together? When?
Well, we all grew up together. As far as Souls of Mischief in the same neighborhood in Oakland. So we met really by going to the same schools, which is weird because none of the schools were in the area that we lived in. We all kind of bussed to further areas, but we met at those further areas and then realized we all kind of lived within walking distance of each other. All kind of had a mutual interest in hip-hop, and that was, you know, graffiti, breakdance, and everything, but rap music is something that I think it doesn't require a lot of pens. It doesn't require turntables necessarily and everything. So something, it's portable, something we could hang out together and do together. And that kind of became the focus of our, not focus of our friendship, but what we sort of bonded around. And it kind of grew from there to Dell the Funky Homo Sapien, who's Ice Cube's cousin, getting signed first and then reaching back and helping get us all signed. So Hieroglyphics is Dell the Funky Homo Sapien, Souls of Mischief, Casual, Domino, and Pep Love. So we kind of are like a musical collective. I say early 90s is when we became professionals, but we've known each other since the 80s. And just been fortunate to have a long career with longevity and being able to stick together and sort of ride the ups and downs. And I guess currently we're on a super upswing. We got a new album. We got a new remix album. It's... things are great. I'm happy.
Oh, no.
I had to go there.
Damn it. What do you mean, like, by professional? How do you become professional?
All right. I mean, I guess it just got to the point where we started selling music. So okay. At that point, you know, your hobby becomes at least your means of survival. Mm-hmm. And then as we started, we got signed to a major label. Which is no longer around. I can't recall their name. But and then from that point, I'd say we were professionals.
Okay.
But to me, kind of a profession, you know, it's something where if this is how we're feeding our families, this is how we're living, and people will pay us to do it, that's when I say professionals. We were probably together 10 years before that, just as hobbyists.
I always say it's when you start signing contracts.
Yeah, when you get a lawyer.
What did that feel like? Because, you know, what were you doing, like, leading up into before the big deal? I don't know how that came to be, because I don't know if there was, like, you say that Dell kind of, like, ushered you guys in. But just before that point, what was happening with Hyro, you know, locally, that was that gave you the indication of where things were going to the point that you got the contract and you knew, like, oh, this is what it is. What was happening? Like, what was the feeling?
I mean, we were throwing our own shows and...
Throwing your own shows, like promoting your own shows?
Yeah, and we were, like, performing at this club. It's called the Berkeley Square. It was kind of a semi-famous club in Berkeley where they had, like, a lot of punk rock acts used to play there.
How old were you guys at that time?
Like 15, 14.
You're promoting your own shows at the age of 15.
Yeah. Out of necessity, to, you know?
I mean, we had one, I think it was like, was the Ice House first? I can't remember, but we did a show where it was like a bunch of people performing, and we performed there too, and we kind of realized, okay, you know, we got people here that want to see us kind of thing. So we could kind of spin off and do it ourselves with everybody in the crew. So it'd be Souls of Mischief and Casual and Pep and whatever, you know? So we were just doing these shows, and it was a really young crowd, but we started to gain popularity.
What, 12?
I mean, it was like everybody was in, like, you know, between 9th and 11th grade, really. You know what I mean? I mean, like, a senior in high school, I think, would probably be the upper level of the age group that was there. And it was like a good energy in there. We would just be performing songs that we recorded not long before we hit the stage and just kind of experimenting, just having fun, you know what I mean?
Well, so. What was popular in hip-hop at that point in time that may have been like the backdrop for that moment?
Maybe y'all?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I mean, for
Tribe and Dayla and Brand Nubian, you know, I mean, it definitely was a lot of, I would say, like East Coast music. I mean, there was always NWA and the West Coast sound, Too Short, all that was always like a part of what we listened to, but that was also what everybody listened to in the area. So we kind of ventured out and would be like, you know, Gangstar or something. You know what I mean? Which wasn't necessarily what people was checking for in Oakland at the time, but we definitely were.
That's what I meant by the backdrop. And, you know, Too Short was probably, was he king of the Bay at that point in time?
Definitely, yeah.
Too Short. So then you guys come with this Tribe, Gangstar, inspired 15, whatever, putting on your own show. What was that like? What was the crowd? Were they responsive, receptive?
The crazy thing is, once we realized, you know, we weren't going down sort of the Too Short route, you know, you get to a certain age in life where your friends are going down more from Oakland, you know, the gangster path, or you can go be a doc. The reason why people move away from Oakland is a lot of brain drain, so smart kids all go away to school and never come back. And we're not sort of this gangster type. We're sort of into the eclectic, you know, jazzy, digging for records, you know, peace and love. I got a little satchel, you know, just hippie-ish kind of, that's kind of Oakland hippie vibe. But when we started doing the shows and stuff, we realized probably most kids, like, hip-hop was a small subculture, but of that subculture, probably most of the kids were into the same stuff we were into, right, more so than into the street stuff. You know, street stuff was for guys who were in the streets. They're not going to parties anyways, you know? So it actually was a cool thing because people come out of the woodwork and you realize that there's a huge community of, I don't want to say conscious, you know, just to label it, but of people who are sort of listening to the further reach in hip-hop or into jazz or into digging for records, who are not just into rap music and things like that. And I think that's what we sort of realized when we started doing it more outwardly rather than in the comfort confines of our own home, so is that there was a huge crowd of kids who didn't necessarily want to wear Nike Cortez and derbies and burners and didn't have perms. You know, they might have had dreads, or they might have been into dance and not necessarily doing the popular dances, but more iller style, you know, different styles of stuff. But to me, at that time, when we started throwing the shows, we realized there's a critical mass of people who think like us. That doesn't mean they're the same as us, but who are more on a quote-unquote progressive. I'm not trying to use these absolute terms because it's not really absolute like that.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, we were like huge fans of the Ghetto Boys and DLC, and, you know, I think everybody listened to that too. So it was this really, it was a very broad spectrum that our peers, like what they listened to as far as hip hop, they weren't just like, oh, I only listen to West Coast gangster rap, or I only listen to East Coast gangster rap, or I only listen to East Coast, you know, more avant-garde style music. I mean, everybody listened to like a huge variety of different types of hip hop. And I think that's what helped us kind of develop our style and make us be more original, because we listened to so many different things and tried to, we respected it all, but we wanted to be different from everything. You know, we didn't want to sound like anybody else, because those were the rules of all of the greatest rappers that we heard, you know? And people would be kind of offended and upset if you just totally ripped off their style, right. You know what I mean? And we would be too. Like, we didn't want to hear any other artists sounding like Tribe Called Quest. We would point that out, like, oh, you know, they biting their style a little bit, or, right. You know, these dudes is trying to be like De La or something, you know what I mean? So, and, you know, Native Tongues was one of our biggest influences, and everybody in that crew was so different. So if you talk about, like, you know, I mean, for me, like, how the Black Sheep came out, it was, even within the differences between Tribe and De La and the Jungle Brothers, and then you have something like the Black Sheep, which is totally different from all of that. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, all those type of things were very inspirational for us to always kind of be different from everybody, you know?
Well, what was interesting for me during that time is knowing that, like, the whole, like, hieroglyphics to me was synonymous to Native Tongues. And it's like the reputation of Hiero kind of, like, really preceded, because there was this movement and this wave that was happening, you know? And that's why I just wanted to know, like, what was the backdrop in Oakland, considering, you know, we're label mates, haha, Franny. We're all signed to Jive, but so was Too Short. And so, you know, like, my introduction to, like, the whole Bay Area came from that Too Short being a label mate, you know, and listening to his stuff and going, wow, that's really different. and like, you know, we're fans of the Ghetto Boys, but that, the Ghetto Boys is like, that Houston sound was totally different, you know? So, and then comes, you know, Dell and you guys, and it just was like, oh, there's like guys on the other side of the world that's similar to us. So it was, I mean, we bonded.
Yeah, definitely.
We did some tours together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really just here for the road stories.
How many years has it been after the statute of limitations?
Yeah, he says he doesn't remember anything. I don't believe a word of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, later. All right. We'll get there. That's fine. I have a question about, like, how did you know that Too Short was it? That he was everywhere? The radio mattered so much more back then. Did MTV, like, what was your evidence?
Too Short has been an underground rapper his entire career. Uh-huh. It's not until very recently, or that he's got songs on, you know, like, his songs aren't, the subject matter is just not radio friendly.
Right.
And
he was never even on KMEL.
But I think when Life Is Too Short, that's video, I guess the box was out, and I think it may have gotten on MTV, maybe. Once you are, like, at that, in that era, once you had gotten MTV or BET, it's like, you made it. Like,
yeah.
This is as big as you can possibly get, especially for hip-hop. I mean, they weren't playing, like, Short gets much more radio burn now than for the first 25 years of his career.
Straight from Oakland, California, home of the rock. 8 woofers in the truck beating down the block. Short dog, I'm that rapping man. I said it before and I say it again. Life is short.
Okay, so how did you know then if it wasn't the radio?
We didn't know. He's the alpha rapper from where we are.
Right.
Like the first guy. I mean, there are other guys, you know, but he's the first one to really be recognized. But before we started traveling as a group, we're just kids from Oakland. So he's the biggest guy from Oakland. I mean, he's hopping on stage right before Run DMC or after De La, before, you know, but Coliseum shows. Yeah. It was before the demise of the Coliseum shows. And it's not like we're looking at him like, yay, our local guy. He's on the same level as these guys. His chain is, we're kids. His chain is the same size. His entourage seems just as menacing. He's just as big as the other guys, you know? So I think we've always sort of grown up believing Short is an international dude. It's the concept of international, too, like, that's something new. Like, this whole thing where it's like I'm a worldwide phenomenon instantly. That yeah. took, you know, you had to like break a world's record or break the sound barrier or go to space to be a worldwide phenomenon. But when we were kids, I mean, it's not 1,000 years ago. It's, you know, just Short being us knowing that he was known other places besides Oakland. As kids, you're like, yeah, this guy, he's doing it.
That's it.
You know, look at that. They got one picture we see in Word Up or something from a concert in Texas. It looks just as much as a picture at home. We're like, oh, he's doing it. Look, he's got fans in Texas. But I don't think we had a consciousness of how huge the hip-hop nation or the culture was until we actually started coming out as artists and traveling.
Okay. So what was the first tour? Where'd you go?
Really?
I remember the first
Our first
show,
tour was New Hampton, Massachusetts.
Northampton.
There you go. Massachusetts.
Isn't there a college there? Smith? Isn't that where Smith is?
I believe so.
Okay, what happened?
We were on tour with A Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul. I mean, as like, you know, 18, 19-year-olds. So I watched the show. Like, I was a fan in the crowd. Like, you know, like, we rocked, we did our thing, and then I went out in the crowd and watched them. And, mm-hmm. you know, just being a student of the game, I think we all were like, let's watch them. Do you know what I mean? And
every night.
Every night, just about. Just about every night going out and watching and studying and being students of the game and learning, because we were new. It was a fresh and new experience for us. So everything about the road, the ups, the downs, all these, you know, trap doors and all that kind of stuff, you have to maneuver around, and, you know, we learned pretty much from them. You know, they taught us the ropes, as they say.
This guy might be the reason we're all still around. He's a strict, straight-edge dude, and he's like, y'all are partying all night. You know we got work to handle tomorrow. Like, you know, and this, you were 22?
Yeah.
You know, so this is the type of maturity, you know, we're like, we're 19. We're like, this guy's 22. He's old enough to drink and doesn't.
Right.
Wow. You know, maybe I should call it a night tonight.
I mean,
you
we know? Had just basically graduated high school. Like, we graduated high school in June or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we went on tour, I feel like it was in October. So it wasn't that big of a gap, you know what I mean, from just going from being in high school to being on tour with, like, your idols, you know what I mean? And I wouldn't say we were super, super impressionable just because we had kind of a rich teenage life, you know what I mean, and just had to avoid a lot of pitfalls already. So we kind of regulated ourselves pretty well, but it was the people that we were on tour with were very serious about their craft, you know what I mean? And, like, there were things going on at the time, like De La Soul played us The Roots, and I had never heard them before, and, you know, Tip played us some cuts off of Nas, you know, Illmatic record, and it really, you know, it just opened our eyes. Like, you know, we're on tour with people that we really respect, but there are, you know, fresh new things also happening, you know what I mean? And so mastering the art of performing and recording songs and just the passion for the music, because I feel like looking at those brothers, like, it was all about the show.
You know, it wasn't about like, yo, afterwards we're gonna go and kick it and do da 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 da, and yo, I got this chick coming flying in, meeting me and all that. You know, that wasn't even the focus. Like, it was all about the performance every night, and like they smashed it, killed it every night. You know what I mean? So for us to sit there and watch that, I mean, the songs are just incredible already, but the energy that was on stage, I mean, De La Soul probably, I can't think of too many people that I've seen that are better than them. You know what I mean? They're just so on point. They have fun. They switch it up every night. It's just like a big, like they're just having all this fun. You know what I mean? You would watch them like smash it, and then Tribe would come on and kill it even harder. You know, so it was just, for us, I think, you know what I mean, we were kind of like standing in the shadow of these giants, and they really were on our side. Like, they wanted us to succeed. They wanted us to come out and do well at the shows. Like, there was no, I mean, I can't even, I've heard other artists talk about, you know, this artist kind of like stepped in my way and they didn't like the way we was doing our thing, so they hated on us. Like, I mean, we didn't even have any concept of that, because they were just very supportive. Like, you know, it was we were so fortunate. I can't even say, you know.
No, it's crazy what he's saying. It's so true. Like, it set the tone for our industry experience, you know. Like, they even when they smashed, they still sat down and critiqued the show every day, you know. So you're serious about the show on tour. Hey, there's fun, whatever, there's buses, all this kind of stuff, but serious about the show on tour. But then also the part where it's like, let me show these younger guys. You got to understand, everybody in the room is 24 or under, probably. The oldest person on the entire tour, maybe 26 or something. So these are all young guys, but they always were like, let me put you on to this. Or, hey, come down to my room, let me holler at you about something. So that's, in turn, how we've sort of moved throughout the industry. I think that's had a lot to do with our success, is that it's like you're building coalitions and inroads and friendships and all these things, and it's based upon a mutual love of this craft. And I don't think that if we would have had a competitive, some of the experiences we hear about other artists, I don't think that we would have had the longevity we have now, because they came at us with such open arms and such open hearts. We thought that's how it is. That's how it's supposed to be. And I think that us spreading that same kind of love to people who've come behind us. I mean, we brought out guys on tour, you know, Eminem, Little Brother, all these people who are now doing well, but at the time we're just starting. And I think because we were embraced with open arms and we moved that way, it's helped us to maintain sort of throughout the industry. But it's crazy. Like, that tour, we still, lessons from that tour we use today.
Like,
after
what?
You know, 10,000 shows, being around the world 20, 30 times, you know, it's and so.
Like, specifically which lesson?
Ooh, bring your own sound engineer. Mm. My goodness, Light used to be, not Light, what was the brother's name? Skeff.
Skeff.
Skeff used to be getting it in. I mean, bring your own sound engineer.
I mean,
what
don't
else?
Cuff the mic.
Don't cuff the mic.
That was like a huge problem for us, because we would just be like screaming and holding the mic, and like, we had all this energy and the crowd would be reacting to our energy, but it wasn't translating.
No, there was no clarity.
Yeah. And so they would be reminding us, like, yo, that was dope, but you guys cuff the mic too much. Like, don't cuff the mic.
Every
so then we would look at
mic.
Each other like,
yeah. What you talking about?
Don't cuff the mic. Like, we
what
would
see
each other
video.
Cuffing the mic and, hey, don't do that, you know? So, I mean.
What is interesting in hearing this, because it's like you like hearing this for the first time, it's like, wow, that was your vision, you know, behind your eyes and your experience. And I'm like, wow, you know, for us, it was the 93 to Infinity album was incredible. Oh. You know, it was a masterpiece. And it's like, yo, they speak our language, you know, and it's like, wow, they're label mates as well, so they're going to go through the same struggle. We don't want them to go through the same struggle. Let's roll, you know. And our approach to touring and taking it from a professional perspective came from Chuck D. Our first big tour was going on opening for Public Enemy, and we got 6 minutes. And this was like, I'm trying to think what was popping. It was like, I think this was like Check the Run. No, was this like, yeah,
we
this
were
was,
we were on the Check the Run.
This was this,
right?
What was no, going we on? We yeah, this was like Check the Run, just fresh off the plate. You know, like, we thought in New York we were finally like, yeah, we're on, but we got sun so badly. And it was like the lesson, like 6 minutes. And Chris, thanks to Chris Lighty, may he rest in power, was yo, we gonna give them the hardest 6 minutes ever seen in a 5-hour tour. There was like Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Kid and Play, Ice Cube, Ice-T, who else is on that tour? I can't remember, so many people, and it was just us and Leaders.
Oh, wow.
You got a t-shirt from that tour after that?
I wish. So, you know, we up against like powerhouses, and it was like 6 minutes. This is, you know, what you have and what are you going to do with it? And I remember before the tour, Chuck sitting us down and saying, I'm responsible for your life. So whatever you do out here is, it's going to fall on me. Like, I'm responsible for your life. So whatever you want to have fun, get into trouble, whatever, but I'm responsible for your life. And hearing those words, it's like, yeah, not only, you know, like, you're going to make the tour look bad, it's like, I'm responsible for your life. And that, just hearing that was like, oh, this is serious. Like, yeah, we can have fun, but that was the aspect that brought the professionalism aspect to it. So, and, you know, bringing you guys on, we wanted to kind of like share the same sort of information, but also you guys, with the whole high road movement, it was like, clearly these guys are doing something right in their business acumen. And then you look at it now, how many years later are we talking? And it was 21 years. And what, like, even what you guys are doing with High Road Day is reflective of just, you know, what was occurring in the origin, which preceded Tribe Called Quest, in my opinion. It's just a matter of your local community and what you guys were doing at the age of 15 that brought you all the way to there is only now, you know, and it's pretty powerful. There is only now is the album title.
Yeah, yeah, we know. We're all not in agreement. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I want to talk about how did this come together.
Can I pause real quick?
Yeah.
And we can come back to it. But Adrian, what was your experience of them at that time?
My experience with them, I think that Tajay nailed it when he said that he tapped into like-minded individuals around the world at that time.
Where were you and how old were you?
I was actually in the Inland Empire, and I was probably a freshman in high school, freshman in high school, I think. And I remember when the 93 Till Infinity video came out. I remember the next day, like, everybody was talking about it, you know, and like Tajay was saying, when you hit MTV or BET, I mean, if you had a video that stood out, I mean, it was a big deal because the subculture was so small, but that small subculture, everybody had something to say. So seeing the cultivated visual aspects that they put on screen, you know, it was like, damn, you know what I'm saying? It was like, I always talked to Ali about how I felt the first time, you know, I saw the Low End Theory tape. You know, I felt the same way when I saw the 93 Till Infinity video. And it was just a reminder that there are other people out there that think the same, because I wasn't, you know, like, I loved Wu-Tang, but I wasn't into selling coke. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't into to just street hustling. That wasn't me. You know, I loved N.W.A., but I wasn't, you know, a gangster. I wasn't, you know, I was just a dancer, a hip hop dude. You know, and when they came out, I was like, damn, those guys are just like my crew. And in my head, I was like, you know, someday, you know, I'll probably meet these dudes. I don't know, you know. And then I met these guys, and you know, they became brothers to me.
How did you know you were going to meet them?
Just, you know, I just knew it. I just felt it because I've loved music, and I was just always a fan of these. I mean, I know every word till 93 till Infinity, to that whole album. So I mean, it's something I listen to every day, and I always say that a lot of artists don't realize this, but you communicate to people through your music. You're actually talking to people, whether there's actual words or not. You're communicating with people that don't know you. And when those consumers actually meet the artist, it's a moment where the consumer knows the artist a little more than they actually think that they do know them, in a way, because the consumer was allowed to listen to their thoughts, listen to their feelings. So I always felt that I knew them personally. So it was just kind of an inevitable thing for me as a producer that I would just meet them. Now, did I know that I'd be producing an album for them? No. You know, I mean, but it's one of those things that just really meeting these guys have just changed my life. Because they changed my life the first time just with the music. I've been so inspired as a producer just studying what they've done and their craft and their just brand outside of just music. And then us coming together to make something new, it's just been really special for me personally, you know. And
I have a kind of a strange story to get another fan perspective in here. In 93, my dad was in the Navy, and in 93 I lived in Lafayette, California, so over the hill, and like all I had was KMEL. And I went to Catholic school, this tiny school, somehow I got to Brand Nubian. It's funny that you mentioned them. I don't know, were they just on KMEL all the time or something?
Slow down.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe that's what happened. And I had a tape, and I just like knew, I don't know, it was like there was this whole other world that I suddenly knew about. And I didn't know that it was happening right across the hill, though. I had no idea.
So you're asking how it started.
Yeah, how did you guys, you know, you met and explain it to me.
From my perspective, I had just finished doing my Something About April album. And that was my album after Black Dynamite, after doing the Black Dynamite score. And those two albums are, you know, the Black Dynamite score is a blaxploitation funk soul soundtrack that's supposed to take place in 74. And the Something About April album is a late 60s psych soul type album. But the common denominator in both these albums are that they're really hip-hop albums because they focus on the break. And the break has served as a lot of the foundation for what hip-hop is today. So I basically made two albums that focused on the foundation of hip-hop, even though there wasn't any, quote, hip-hop song on there. So in making my first album, my first hip-hop album, I wanted to be with somebody that really inspired me. And the reason why I wanted it to be with somebody like that is because I tell a lot of people I stopped listening to hip-hop in 97. I just basically just went off and just started listening to records. And the reason why is because I felt that the music wasn't as cultivated and as special as it once was when there was this close-knit subculture. So in my two albums that were not really hip-hop were gearing me up to get to the point where I could make that hip-hop album. So people were hitting me up like, yo, I love you to produce my album, but they didn't do much for me. A lot of modern artists don't do much for me. Doesn't mean that they're not good. Doesn't mean they're not great at what they do, but I have to be inspired in order to produce. So
you're losing friends as you keep saying stuff.
Franny knows that she's not going to hear much stuff today that's better than a lot of that stuff back then. I mean, I don't even. Anyway.
You'll make them up when they hear the music, but right now you're talking, and they're like, man, it's like the campaign poll. He was like, hide, and just started dipping. But then they're going to hear the music, and they'll be like, we love
Adrian. I could just play lyrics to go and 9-3 till infinity. I'll say, okay, it's your turn. Give me two tracks.
He's going back up. He's going back up.
Give me two tracks.
You gotta tell him how we met, though.
Like, I know, I'm going there. Okay, I'm going there. So basically, I was talking to A+ on Twitter, and I said to him, we're just doing instant messages. I was like, yo, man, I'd love to do some stuff with you guys sometimes. He's like, yeah, man, you know, big fans. I'd love to do something with you, and I was super excited. Week went by, I didn't hear from him. Another week went by, I didn't hear from him. Like, damn, okay. And then I got hit up by RZA's label to do Ghostface album, and I was like, okay, I guess this is going to be my first one. But I actually wanted my first one to be with you guys. I'm not sure if you knew that. But so I did the Ghostface album, and then A+ hit me up again maybe 7 months later. And then I was like, finally, the album that I really want to do. Nothing against Ghost, but this is the one I had set my mind on doing. And then we met on Twitter, we got on the phone, I got on the phone with A Plus, and a few days later, I got to actually hear all their voices on the phone, and it tripped me out. I mean, because like I said, I knew all your voices already by all the music, and then I'm on the phone with all you guys. I remember it was early in the morning too. I was like, damn. These fools must work hard because it's like 8:45 or something in the morning and they're actually up. Oh my God, I was tripping. So that was our first meeting. And at that point, I just said, damn, I gotta really get in, because if we're doing an album, I have to try to do something better than what I feel is their best work. Mm. You know, so at that time is when I really started just studying their album even more so, and just studying the time. From the native tongues to what they were doing, and trying to determine what was special about that time. And to me, what was special about that time is that it was the first time in hip hop that everybody was focusing on a lot of the quote jazz breaks at the time. So it's like the late 60s to mid 70s jazz breaks. So it was a lot of Fender Rhodes stuff, horns and all that stuff, but it was a compositional perspectives that Tribe used, that you guys use, that Brand Newbie use, all that stuff. I wanted to make that new again. And at that time, I just really studied a lot of the breaks that you guys use, a lot of the breaks that Tribe use, because I didn't even know Ali at that time. And then we just started making an album.
I know, because we've been working together, I've gotten a little glimpse into your process. When your approach to making music is completion before you start, like, and what I mean by that is you see the whole the whole piece of the body of work, the piece of art,
right.
And there's a complete story. So there's a fullness from the music aspect of it, but then even from the story and what's supposed to happen with it. And this album is again another one of those pieces of art. So how did that, like, when you all finally came together and you're talking about the break being the foundation, and you had certain sounds that you studied and you pieced together sonically, so you had that vision, but in terms of the next step into this full concept of there is only now and what it is and what the people will hear when the album is released, how did you come up with that, like, from start to finish? Because it's a one complete, it's like one complete, like, It's
a cinematic experience.
It's a cinematic experience.
And I'm a composer. I just compose for film. I love cinema, and one of the things that these guys tapped into on 93 Till Infinity is their ability to tell stories in a very special way. And I know when we first started getting together, we were like, "Yo, we got to figure out what we got to have some kind of concept to this." And my personal reason for wanting a concept to it, because I want to score to their concept. So I wanted to use the backdrops of all these breaks of that time to score to whatever concept that they had. So, I mean, if it's a dark moment, okay, I would tap into one of the darker breaks. If it's a beautiful moment, bring in one of the beautiful breaks. You see what I'm saying? So, but they had to really illustrate this concept. So we were sitting in the studio for a couple of days and trying to figure it out, and a lot of people know that these four dudes were serious battle rappers back in the day. Not to say that they don't got it anymore, but they started telling me a story one night in the studio that had my mouth on the floor. I never heard this story before, and after hearing that story, I was like, yo, that's it, we gotta go. And the first song I produced, I was tapping into like a Mission Impossible type start of the journey kind of beat for them. And that was our first song. So I'll let you guys pick up from there.
You guys act like you've never done this before. Like, I mean,
I'm trying to think how to tell a story without giving too much away, because it's a delicate balance.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to give away this. You know,
pardon me. You're absolutely right. But and I do know this.
It started from the incident he's talking
Kevin
about.
Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Sosa.
The story happened in like 1994 to a member of Hieroglyphics named Domino. We were all there. And Dante Ross was there, and the rapper Saphira was there, and a bunch of other people. And it was basically like a life or death kind of thing. Like, should I just tell it?
Because I understand, and right.
See, this is the journalist and the musician,
this is my conflict.
But basically, that's the starting point of, you know, it's just like with music. Like, you get a central idea, and then you build around it. Right. So it's not like everything in the whole story is this true, actual event, but it's based on this something that actually happened.
Well, I'll say this. 21 years after listening to the record, the cadences, the lyrics, the styles are fresh as hell. And it makes me wonder, what are some of, I mean, obviously you're veteran, so you know, the expectation is damn right. You know what I mean? Like, give me my props, like, I'm going to kick your butt. You know what I mean? Like, this is not a game. We live this. But I think the tendency is for people who get up there in time when it comes to being rappers is that you kind of fall off, you lose your edge, you lose the hunger and the desire to paint, to create, you know, to communicate, to tell a story, to even feel. Like, you know, there's a numbness, a disconnected aspect of it.
You've been through this, huh? You've gone through this. Sounds like you know something about this.
But you guys don't come off like that. At all, you come off like, yo, I'm really 16, and we just getting started, and that's what this sounds like. On top of some music that is well composed, and I think that hip hop has never been experienced in this fashion when it comes to the composition being a well-y crafted aspect of. The music, not just like, yo, we made the beat and right here we want to have a chain. Like, I mean, there's everything is so intricate and detailed, and then what you guys put on top of it, for me, I'm like, oh, if this is what you're doing 21 years, you know, into it, then like, look out for the next 21 years, which to me makes the whole 93 to infinity aspect even more masterful. And maybe you guys realize that when you obviously, you know, you wrote that song is amazing. Just in terms of science, you know, and this album right now, There Is Only Now, it still seems like a kind of ring of some infinity sort of like placement of time and where you are and how you deal with it, how you maneuver. So I think there's a couple of things that I'm seeing from this album and just amazed.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like with this project, for our whole career, we've always like kind of steered clear of trying to do 93 Till over again. And we got so far, you know, the years had passed, and the way that we were able to revisit the album, not just the song 93 Till Infinity, and kind of delve into that energy that was there, and it's more of just like the way that the manner in which it was recorded, because when we did 93 Till Infinity, we were capturing moments in time more than just going in there and just I'm writing my lyrics, and you know, it's very just step by step kind of recording. You know, we actually tape. Yeah, I mean, it was recorded on a 2-inch tape first of all, but you know, there were moments captured. Like, we would say, hey, you know, say that verse over again with a little bit more energy, you know, and that was the verse that came out on the album. And we had that same type of energy when we were recording this record. Not necessarily trying to recreate 93 Till Infinity, but the energy, kind of the electricity that's in the studio and the way that we were pushing each other, all of us. Like, you know, making sure that certain cadences were said correctly. Like, we're like, okay, I see what you're doing there, but if you say this part like that, and you know, make sure fluctuation goes up and comes down. And it was, I think that we were very successful in actually capturing those moments, which is so difficult. I mean, it's like catching lightning in a bottle, you know what I mean? But we did it.
I think one of the just you're speaking about capturing a moment, and I and being familiar with Adrian's process. For those who may not know, he has the sound, and your process is analog, and it's, you know, 2-inch. You record the 2-inch. You're not a Pro Tools recording or Logic or Ableton type of a producer. And one of the things I think is interesting for the four of you guys, A Plus is not here, but in terms of, like, you probably can identify with this, having to share a microphone. And you may have had a performance where it's like only two mics, but there's four MCs and we got to pass the mic. You know, and that adds, I think, an element to just like the stage performance of how you're going to, you know, just that energy and that exchange. But then from the writing process, it seemed like, I mean, I'm privy to the masters, so I'm listening. But then I get a sense that there was a pass the mic sort of a process to the recording, which I don't know if that even added to that energy that you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been trying to come together and be, because we are a group, and, you know, use that to our advantage. But at the same time, with four MCs and we have ideas that we want to get out, and so it's hard sometimes to just be trapped into a situation where you can't really just spit 24 bars every time. You know what I mean? And I think that over time of doing it and kind of pulling away from trying to, all right, now it's my turn and I really have to, like, go in right here. Instead of doing that every time, just kind of falling back and being like, okay, how can I add into this song? How can I create, let the flow just keep going in the direction that it is, because there's an energy in the song that's moving in the right direction and I don't want to go against the grain. And, you know, when you free yourself up like that, I think better things happen. Even though maybe as you're writing it, you're like, well, I could go a little harder. I wish I had more time to say more lyrics. But the fact that how we just are able to kind of play off of each other, and a lot of that is from the experience, like you said, of being doing the shows and having that, you know, the one mic and you got to pass it off and all that type of thing, because that is the vibe on that album. It's like we are passing the mic, definitely.
I want to.
But I'm sorry. This is a credit to Adrian. You were talking about how it's the song itself, it's done, basically. I mean, he's like, he finishes the structure of the song, all that is finished. With the writing process, it helped us out a lot, because it's like, you know the destination, but we just have to figure out how to get there. So normally, like, when we're writing songs, Tajay might write a verse, we might all be sitting there writing verses at the same time, and then we just like, oh, you go first, or you go first. But with this record, most of the time, we couldn't start writing the second verse until the first verse was done, because it was a story. So we had to know where the next part, and the same with the third verse, and then the fourth verse. So it was just a fresh, new way of making songs and making an entire record. And that's a huge credit to the producer for a group like us that's been doing music for as long as we have. You would think we had maybe stumbled across or done something like that, where, you know, we've done songs like that, but to take an entire record and base it around this incident, and we know this is the end point, but how do we get there? I think that kept it fresh and new for us, and it brought back that feeling of, you know, that same energy of, you know, us passing the mic and that vibe. So
were you guys writing? I mean, so do you guys write together all the time separately? I mean, it just seemed like you guys, like, the whole entire thing, it was just like we're all on one page together.
We were. I mean, normally it depends on, really, it's situational. So sometimes it'll be a beat and everybody will be at the studio and we'll write a song then.
Yeah.
Sometimes the guy will send a verse and a hook and a beat and then we'll, you know, do it in a row. But with this, it was literally we'd wake up from our 20-minute cat nap from the night before. And he'd have something. Adrian didn't sleep, so he would compose a next song pretty much throughout the night while we were knocked out on the floor of the studio. Mm-hmm. And we'd wake up to something fresh. And a lot of times he had ideas like, doesn't this sound like, or maybe we can do this, that, and the third over this beat. Because he makes these soundscapes. It's not just a beat. But as far as writing, not a single song was done. Maybe one verse or two verses remote as far as writing, but everything else was done literally. Let me hear the last two lines of your verse. Let me hear the plot, how the plot thickens from your verse. Nobody could go until the previous person went. It just was. It was
a
narrative.
You just take a pre-written verse and fit it into the construct. I mean, even Snoop and Busta Rhymes, you know, they listened to the song and they were like, okay, all right, I see where this is going. And then they wrote a verse specifically for that song. It wasn't like email in a verse.
It's kind of like how if you have a whole bunch of jazz artists together and it's a bunch of horn players and it's like, you know, one person's improv and they're doing their thing, but it's just like, you know, that one person has a line, they leave that line, the other person picks up that line, that melody, and plays it, but then begins to construct their own melody behind it. You guys all have your own individual style, but it's so, like, seamless and well put together. Well, your individuals are well represented, but the storyline is just like very tight. And maybe because you guys are battle rappers, I don't know. You know, you got 21 years. I don't know what it is, but there's such a freshness of it. And knowing without, you know, letting the cat out the bag or whatever that saying is, the story behind this album is not risky, but it's just it's brave. And I'm wondering how were you able to keep this sort of like contained secret for this long? But in being you guys, we all have secrets together that Franny's trying to get out of us. So I know that, but it's a fascinating story, basically, is what I'm saying. And to know, you know, part of me wants to know how much of this is real, or how much is this embellished? You know, did you, you know, if there's some fiction in there to, you know, to help to tell the story and make it not so detailed to what actually happened, or is there just like, this is really what happened from beginning to end?
Let's just say it's based on a true story. There are songs on there where every single word, except for maybe two or three, is, you know, stone cold truth, like fact. And then, you know, I mean, it's a record that we want people to get into. So I don't necessarily say we went Hollywood with it, but we definitely embellished in order to add elements of just surprise and stuff and a little bit more action.
Well, Tajay, we actually did kind of get Hollywood on it because Ali Shaheed is a narrator.
Yeah,
that's right.
So we had to go pull out the big guns.
We had to pull out the big guns. We pulled out all the stops. You know, we wanted to make sure that it was a blockbuster. But the original incident out of which this thing is based, 100% true. Like, I'm seeing it right as we're speaking. I'm running down the street from bullets.
Okay, so without telling the story, why that story? And did everybody agree that was going to be the root of the album?
Well, wasn't it fluky? Like, it seemed like we started talking about it and you're like, that's it.
Well, you guys were talking about it, but the thing is, like Ali was saying, you know, I approach everything from a completion perspective. So this is just a 2-inch perspective to me. When you're recording the tape, you don't even start recording until you're convinced that this is exactly what you're going to do. You don't say, well, let's try this out. And when we were getting together, I mean, I didn't even start writing music yet or anything. Like, I needed to know where we were going to go. So we were just talking about different things. Remember at first we talked about we had a whole fictional kind of comic book story, if you can recall, just about battling. And Dell was going to get captured and all this. Do you remember all that?
From like the power of the Hyrule sign.
Exactly, the Hyrule signs of power. And then, you know, I was like, yeah, that's cool. And we were all like, that's cool, we could go with it. But nothing hit me until you guys started on a fluke talking about that story. That's when I was like, that's done. We got to go. And what really hit me about that is that it painted the picture of watching the Warriors. And you guys are four guys. And also, when I was showing this, I was with Chino XL about a month ago showing him some stuff from this album. And he said to me, it's not fair that there's four MCs that got together as a group that are this dope. It's just not fair. I wish if I had four MCs I could have got with that were on my level that I could do a group with. And he said that about you guys. And seeing you guys as a group, a cohesive group, kind of like battling the streets. And this battle that you guys talked about, I mean, I was like, that's done. We got to go there. So also to go back to what you were talking about as far as them passing the baton on to each other, this album, like I said, is inspired by the time. And the time is 93, 94.
Oh, I thought you meant like the time, the band.
Them too, so you know, you know. Get it up, you know. B-side.
But, yeah, but it was inspired by the time, and the time was taking these 4-bar, 8-bar loops is some of the best soul, jazz, funk music ever made. But what wasn't done, what hasn't been done up to now is going back to that sonic palette and making new composition with chord changes for now. So it's looking back to move forward in a way that is nostalgic and new. And you guys served as the horn section.
Yeah.
But you guys were making words with the horns. So Tajay's a trumpet, and he has different styles. You play in different styles on different tracks. But then when the sax comes in, which is Festo, you know, he's continuing the story, but he's playing from your last notes. Because what would happen is that we say, okay, we're working on song number 3 today. Tajay, you're going to start. Tajay would start. He would do, let's say you do 8 bars. Festo would be like, what were those last words that you said? And there were times, remember, we would double the last word so that we could go into the next section. But the thing is, like, yeah, I'm the producer, but we all produced this together. We all held hands and did this together. We all moved in the same way. And then at the end of this, Ali is playing the radio announcer, like a la the movie The Warriors. And he's wrapping this story together. And he's having this all make sense. And also, the reason why we wanted you, besides just obviously being fans of you, is that you guys are the foundation for why this is here, why this album came about. If there was no Tribe Called Quest, this album would be totally different. So we have a key member of a key movement wrapping this album up for us, helping us tell this story. And at the end of the day, listening to this album, I still feel every single time I listen to it that I'm watching a movie, and I'm still hearing things that I didn't realize happened.
You know? Yeah, I would love to have you guys come back after the release of the record, and everyone, you know, the people can hear the record and receive it and understand the story, and to then maybe go into a bit more detail, if you're willing, to talk about it without exposing too much sooner, because it's you know, unfortunately, we lost Tupac and we lost Biggie. You know, we lost Scott LaRock. You know, we lost Jam Master Jay. And for unknown reasons, you know, there's an element that exists in, you know, people, I'm not going to put it on hip hop. It's just in the communities and environments that we are born and raised in. And there are challenges and struggles that you would think successful businessmen, because that's what we are, you know, don't have to face, but the reality is this, you know, we face it, our kids face it, and I just want to be able to talk about it, you know, with a little bit more detail into the story and how, like, what was the end result of that incident. Moving, because of the time, I know, you know, I want to move this along just a little bit and asking that, not that any of the current state of hip hop may be relevant to the recording process. Clearly it wasn't. Like, this, you listen to this album, it's like, you guys are definitely in your own universe, period, point blank. Nothing else exists. Not even Pro Tools in the 2-inch state of the world of Adrian's lab there. It is way different than anything that's out there. Do you ever give thought to the fact that you're consistently just kind of going against the grain, and really so much so with this album? Or does the current state of what's the current state of hip hop mean to you?
I feel like the pendulum is swinging back towards sort of lyrical content, just because I think for a while it got so dumbed down that literally the kids couldn't follow any dense lyrical stuff. But I think with the help of Eminem, who's very clear but still dense, and with the help of just the way people are, you know, hip hop is a regular genre, not some exotic stuff now, I think people are going to follow this record, and maybe, hopefully, we'll be pushing this pendulum, you know, adding a little bit of weight to it, mm-hmm. so that it swings even more in the lyrical direction. I don't think that there are other rappers that are incapable of doing what we did. It's just not been the, you know, it's about singles now. It's right. about a hot single now. It's not even about a full album. So nobody's even focusing on a full-length project that will, you know, where the songs don't live separate from each other.
Right.
So I think maybe in that way we're being mavericks, that we're not doing the single-based music. We're doing a whole record. I mean, I don't want anybody to digest this record in separate parts.
Yeah.
Literally, sit down and listen to it, because that's how we listen to records. I remember sitting and zoning out and not waking up until I had to flip the record over. But I mean, to y'all, you know, your first album, vinyl, you'd go home and you'd sit and you'd listen to the whole record at least once before you spoke to your friends about it.
Yeah, that's
or anything.
Definitely of that ilk. Yeah. You have to listen to it from beginning to end. You can't, like, you cannot dissect one part of it. If you do, then you're in the wrong neighborhood.
I mean, they stand alone. I say the songs stand alone, but when you look at it in terms of whole. So I think that is sort of the maverick type thing that we're doing. But the rest of it is just, we grew up in an era where if you sounded like this dude and y'all are at the same show, there might be violence. Like, just sounded like him. Like, yo, you're biting him. That's whack. So we don't even want to sound like our old records.
Right.
You know, like, that's who we're trying to beat, you know, the other guys in our crew, et cetera. They're who keep us motivated. But then when you add an element like Adrian, when he brings in this soundscape that has never existed before in the right. history of time. Like, it's different than when we sample records and right. do that stuff. It's a brand new soundscape. So it's exciting different parts of your brain. You know, when you hear things you've never experienced before, it elicits a sort of response. And I think that the exuberance from that response is why we got such a good sort of a lyrical thing going on over the music. I mean, you get excited over finding a new sample. But when a guy is waking you up every morning with fresh music, like fresh fresh bread or something, and it's something you've never heard out of machines you didn't even think existed anymore, it takes you to that next level that's separate from whatever is going on in music in general. Like, the music that's on our record, jazz guys are going to listen to it and be like, I need to get me one of those.
Yeah.
Or funk guys are going to be like, ooh, that was funky. Like, it's not just the hip-hop record in that case. So maybe that's kind of what gives us our against-the-grain thing, is that we're not going out to set a precedent for best rap record. Like, we're trying to make records like Inner Visions or you know, or Superfly or something like that.
Yeah.
And we just happen to be MCs. But so maybe that's really the departure, more so than us saying, hey, look at current hip-hop, we want to be different. Because there's a lot of really good stuff right now, and very recently, but the pendulum is swinging back in the other direction. I think the kids are just, they beat their heads against the wall enough times to where they're like, this isn't working, let's go somewhere else. And it's happening with, like, Pro Era, or with TDE, or with Black Opera, things like that.
Do you guys have some freedom? Like, because maybe you don't have to, I don't know, not to go back to jive, but, like, what do you owe anybody? I mean, you want the record to sell, right? You want it to make some money, but how is that? How does this album function in the market?
Well, I just want to comment. Tajay doesn't care anymore because he's now an architect. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
But now you guys can jump in. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I mean, I was, you know, I think, for us, the main objective never, especially working with Adrian, was never to sell records. That was not what we came together to do. I think what our goal was to really create, like, a beautiful piece of art. And I feel like we're kind of mature enough and seasoned enough and have enough love and respect for the art and the culture that we've describing it like that before even recording it. Like, we were like, we just want to make a beautiful piece of art, which is far different from what we said when we wanted to do 93 Till Infinity, which was a beautiful piece of art. But it was like, yo, we got to come in, you know, we got to let people know what's up with us and get our respect. And, you know, it was like a whole different thing, you know? It wasn't really it wasn't that... where you really have a knowledge base that you're kind of reaching from. And it just made it a very pleasurable experience to make these songs and hear what we created every day. And you know, being the artist and thinking creatively, you know, it's like you, art and commerce really don't mix. You know, I mean, once they start to cross paths, things get a little murky. So when we were recording this album, and we did take some risks with the content and what we're talking about and all that, but I think at the end of the day, especially for people that love hip-hop, they will see it as, you know, as like a fan of art will look at a Van Gogh or a Picasso or something. I mean, I'm not trying to toot my horn like that, but it's just like if you're a fan of art and you see a beautiful piece of art, it strikes you. And it could be a very, you know, sad, disturbing picture, or it could be something beautiful. But at the same time, you see it in as a connoisseur of art, it resonates with you. And I think that that's what we were trying to do with this record. You know, we wanted to make a beautiful piece of art, and we wanted people that love art to see it and have a connection with it. Like, almost to the point to where we didn't really make this album to where you could leave it up to interpretation. So it's something that people are like, oh, you know, that song means this to me and that, this, that, and the third. We wanted to make it very direct. And that's a risk, you know, when you're trying to make beautiful art. You want to, sometimes you like, it's better to leave it open because people can have their own interpretations and get more in tune with it. So it's like, you really have to get on our page to get with this record. But it is so, sonically, it just sounds so good. You know what I mean? I mean, it just, it's buttery. It's recorded on two-track. It's not done in this little small computery box that is kind of a philosophical area, you know, where you don't know where it's coming from. It's in this space somewhere that you've put, where does it exist really? You know what I mean? This is actually on, physically tangible, like on a tape. And just the vibe that was there, I mean, trying to look at, to do a project like that and think about selling records, you're gonna stumble out of the gate. Mm-hmm. So the whole point of it is to just be as creative as you possibly can. Don't put any limits on yourself. And it's like, it's very liberating, you know, to work like that.
Personally, I just wanted, because we're talking, you asked about the market, so obviously money comes into play. I would just hope that it does well enough from that standpoint that everyone involved with the creation of this record can tour together and show it to the world in a live setting. Because I think we'd be doing it a great injustice to not, you know, to not do that. So that's what I see is the top of the mountain for this album. When I think about what I ultimately wanted to do, I want to be on stage performing this record with everybody that was involved creating it and giving it to the world. Because that's ultimately what all music, that the end point for all music for me from is doing it live, you know. So
I want people, after they've heard it, like a year and a half or something, I think we should make a movie. you know what I mean? No, definitely. Like no dialogue, definitely. Even. Just play the record,
yeah,
and sort of let it play out. But I want people to imagine it first. That's, I mean, yeah. I mean, Mark, you know, we're indie, so of course, being indie, you hope that your fans support. But like he said, I mean, literally the indie game a lot of times is about the live performance of it. I mean, this is music. This is not necessarily an artifact, but pick up the artifact because it's going to be a classic.
And just to add on to that, I mean, for me personally.
Is this CEO of Linear Labs or is this the artist?
This is the artist.
Adrian Young. Okay.
Artist Adrian Young. For me, speaking of Linear Labs, I'm launching my label with this album. And the label is, I look at it as a new modern movement in music, more of an artisan perspective on music. Just it's a lifestyle oriented, handcrafted perspective on just what we feel music's supposed to be. And what I wanted to do with the creation of this album is illustrate some of the points I've been trying to say to people for a long time. And one of the main points is that when hip-hop music became popular music, a lot of it got watered down, and a lot of subculture dissipated. And I wanted to show that you could bring back some of these artists. not to say that they ever went anywhere, but to bring back in the forefront, to show that these dudes were dope and are actually better now. I mean, like, you guys don't know that. Like, my, like, one of the things for me was to say, like, I want people to hear this and be like, God damn, dude, I can't believe these guys could still do it. And like I said, when I was with Chino, you know, with Ali, hearing the response from them, from what you guys have done on this album, you know, people say that this is the best work you guys have ever done, the best work. And I personally believe it is as well. And like, my thing is, what do I personally want to get out of it, whether it's money or props or whatever? Of course, money would be great. Props come and go. Props really don't mean much. But for them to get the respect, the continuing respect, as artists, as old jazz artists used to get throughout their lives, that's what I want to happen with you guys. And also my band, Venice Dawn, obviously, for, you know, helping make this happen. But my thing personally is really you guys, you know, because I love you guys to death, and you guys have given me the privilege of working with one of my heroes. You know what I'm saying? You guys have been my heroes before I met you guys, and now I even have even more respect for you guys. And also to bring in another legend like Ali, this is a special moment in time. It's very, very special. Whether people like the album or not, they will be able to, they must be able to appreciate the fact that we all came together to try to make a change in music based on the fact that we think music is very important, and we're going back to what we felt was germane to the old subculture. And that's just being ourselves and being different and not just trying to make rap music, but just making soul music, making something that is great and soulful, captivating, and that can hopefully influence other people to do the same.
You did it. So it's just a matter of time before the record is released and people of the world will be able to experience in that. And again, I know, like, the time for us is short, so there's so much I want to cover and won't be able to, but I want to ask you guys about Hyrule Day. That's pretty big that you guys have. Is this correct on the calendar of California, or at least in San Francisco, Oakland, Bay Area, that what has been dedicated to you guys from the government?
Well, we have these smallpox bombs there. We have, no. We have a day, well, 9-3, it was a fan that was like, you know what, September 3rd should be Hyrule Day, and everybody should wear their Hyrule gear and hang out with Hyrule guys and, you know, and do Hyrule things. And because 9-3-93 is like a big year for us. So I think Casual roll with it and was like, you know, we should do a Hyrule Day on September 3rd. So in 2012, September 3rd actually happened to be Labor. Is it Labor Day?
Mm-hmm.
Labor Day. And so we had a street festival, and it was crazy.
I mean, crazy.
The cops were out there hanging out, firemen, police. We didn't even pay for this police protection, all this kind of stuff, the first year.
They just came through.
But they came and hung out. I mean, after it was over, they were hanging, chilling. And that was the first annual Hyrule Day. Got a lot of local artists, people we grew up with, you know, Planet Asia, Zion, things like that, The Grouch, and got them to come out and rock, and then we sort of headlined it. And then last year we teamed up with a company called Linden Brewing Company, which is a beer, you know, like a craft beer company in Oakland. They've got a brewery near the cranes that make Oakland famous, the big, they look like AT-ATs from, mm-hmm. They actually are the prototype for the AT-AT. Star Wars. So we did something there, and it was triple the size. I mean, almost 20,000 people came. Venice Dawn rocked. Craig G from the Juice Crew rocked. I mean, you know. So really, this is our way of giving back to our community through a free, it's a free event. And we sort of pledged to keep it free. It's a family event, so there's corrals and areas for the kids. And it's something where it's just a free music festival in Oakland, on Labor Day until 9-3, probably hits the weekend,
right.
You know, as it moves around. It'll be on Labor Day. So this year it's September 1st on Labor Day. And the mayor actually last year dedicated September 3rd. Mayor Jean Kwan made September 3rd Hyrule Day in Oakland. So, I mean, that it's surreal to even talk about having a day in your own city.
That's professional.
Yeah. Based on a song you guys made
based
the
on
last
song.
Minute.
And, I mean, at the end of the day, the crowd cleans up the garbage, for instance.
What?
No violence, no, you know what I'm saying, no drug-induced comas or anything like that. Everybody's out there chilling, and I mean, including the police department, the fire department, all that. So I think it. I mean, that is a great feeling that we're able to give back to Oakland something that hopefully will exist after we're long gone. Maybe they'll spin a couple of our records. Maybe they'll throw the symbol up. But hopefully we have sort of this festival-type holiday that's centered around really indie music that is a family affair. So it's sort of these three different things. It's this festival recognizing hieroglyphics and families and the indie spirit that we have. I mean, we have local, all the booths are, you know, local craftspeople and artisans. Local food places. It's. I mean, I can gush for hours on this thing. To me, it's an awesome experience because we're curating it, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're exposing our, you know, kids who are just in the neighborhood, people who are there with their kids. We're exposing people to this subculture that raised, I think, a lot of us, you know, as far as, I'm not going to say it's indie now, or it's underground. What you can give it all these labels, but really just sort of like progressive music, progressive hip hop music, and it's not just hip hop. We've got we have Frida Robots and all kind of electronica stuff there too, mm-hmm. but just exposing people to this sort of progressive crowd, musically eclectic sort of progressive crowd, and then making it about peace and about our city, which is always getting black eyes for some reason, mm-hmm. and making it about family. And I mean, people who have never heard of Hiero musically, constantly hitting us up about Hiero. It's to them, it's an event. It's not a musical group throwing something. It's like, what's going on with Hiero Day? They're more concerned that it's going to happen and there's going to be places for the kids and face painting than even about all the bands that are going to be there. But this year is going to be crazy. We're doubling the footprint. It's going to be crazy.
Maybe we should go.
Yeah, I mean,
you definitely should go.
We need to figure this out because it's Labor Day weekend, and so there's a lot of pull. But I just think in terms of, you know, the obstacles that people go through in the name of hip hop, and especially, you know, some of the corporate sort of obstacles you may come up against, the community oppression obstacles that you may come up against, the obstacles of being told, like, yo, you want to be a rapper? It's all about Bugattis and strippers and all these things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you guys have what no other hip-hop person has ever been able to do is to get that sort of accreditation from and backing from your city saying that you're doing something really beautiful and we support that. And I think that's the people need to hear that. You know, that's the image that I want to see. If I don't have any children, but if I did, I have niece and nephew, want to introduce them to, you know, what hip hop is supposed to look like.
That's why you stay looking so young. I just realized. I'm like, oh, you're just chilling. You can do whatever you want to right now. Right. Go hang out. Get a Bugatti. You know what I'm saying? Do whatever you want to do.
There it is. Called you out.
Called me out. The freedom to paint. No one's saying, hey, but Dad. But, you know, thank you so much for coming up here.
Yeah, thank you guys.
I don't know what A-plus is, but we understand. He's in the building. He's missed. Adrian, thank you so much for bringing this whole idea, this concept together. It's pretty special, I think.
Word.
And like I said, you guys sound really fresh.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to hearing a whole lot more. Like, the cadence is, I mean, I'm all about the cadence. And just like spitting fire. So... Thank you so
much.
I want
to hear that remix
album.
Remix.
Yeah, see, you come back and talk about that remix.
Yes. We will talk about that.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Word, thank you. Peace.